The Rhythm of the City, 94.3 WYBC. I'm Jose Candelario, and this is the Electric Drum. I'm with Husnain Kermali. Did I get it right?
You got it right.
Oh, Dr. Doctor. Sorry, I got to put the doctor in front because we paid top dollar for that. Dr. Husnain Kermali with Waterbury. Or is it? It used to be St. Mary's, right?
No, it is St. Mary's.
It's still St. Mary's.
St. Mary's Hospital in Waterbury, Connecticut. Yeah.
But now it's part of the Hartford Healthcare.
Trinity Health.
Oh, Trinity Health.
Trinity Health of New England.
Let me get that right. Trinity Health New England.
Trinity Health of New England, St. Mary's Hospital.
It's just it's like a turf war now with all these hospitals and healthcare systems.
Well, we're all trying to do the right thing, taking care of patients. That's for sure.
That's it for sure. Tell me a little. Well, we're here to plug Black Men in White Coats. There's a summit taking place November 8th between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. at the Palace Theater and the UConn campus at Waterbury.
Correct.
Okay, so that's what we're plugging at the end. But let's get into Dr. Kermali's story. Where are you from?
So thank you for having us today on your show. It's an honor and a privilege to be here and speak to the community here in the reach, I guess, that Electric Drum has. My story is a simple one. People ask me where I'm from all the time, and I like to say I'm from the world, which is kind of true. My family background is from Zanzibar in Africa. So generations ago, my great grandparents, great 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 grandparents, and probably even greater than that, migrated from India over to Africa as part of the trade and spice transitions that were happening, and landed in Zanzibar. We love to say we're from Zanzibar, that we are Zanzibari, and that's a source of pride. And very important to be able to say that. And from there, of course, my parents moved to the mainland on Tanzania and into Dar es Salaam and transitioned through Nairobi and then ultimately ended in the Middle East for a period of time. My father had work there in the construction industry, which is where I was born, in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. So that was my birthplace. Very quickly, though, around that time, they moved into Canada, into Toronto. And so grew up in Toronto, in Don Valley in Toronto, was great there. And then we moved out into the suburbs, into Markham, Ontario, which is kind of where continued through, you know, my schooling years. And then went to University of Toronto at Scarborough, which was a great time to have with good friends there, great education, graduated with a molecular and cellular biology degree, and worked a little bit before coming to Quinnipiac.
We're going to slow down. Yeah. We're going to slow it down.
For sure.
Let's get back and talk about your father.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Ashik.
Ashik.
Yeah, Ashik Ali.
He said he was determined.
He is a determined individual. That's a good term for him. Determined individual. He is fiercely independent, and I like to say, and he likes to say, he calls a spade a spade. But he is a fascinating individual. He has had to adapt a number of times. Has worked through trauma, which has affected us all, but has emerged again as an independent, very strong individual. He still lives in our house in Markham, independent, drives, volunteers at the hospital as a chaplain and works in that space. A great man who has raised five great children. And probably has influenced many more along the way.
Tell me a little story with you and Dad growing up, that or a lesson that learned that when times were tough, you know, you lean into.
Yeah. So, you know, I think one of the memories that I definitely have of my father, and we affectionately call him Abba, which means father in our native tongue, was probably when he took us to see the Blue Jays at Exhibition Stadium. And I bring up the Blue Jays because they're in the playoffs right now. Did beat the Yankees last night. I'll throw that in for all my Blue Jays fans out there. And we went to see the Blue Jays, and I still remember him. We went with our Taekwondo class out to see the Blue Jays at Exhibition Stadium. And I remember him still in the stands, sort of cheering on the Blue Jays and helping us with our cheers as well. Which I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I haven't seen that side of my dad before. We hung out together while we were renovating the basement in our house, you know, three brothers and him. So we did a lot of work that way. He taught me how to use a hammer and use a drill and sand things down, make sure that the drywall is nice and smooth before you put on a coat of paint. So I owe a lot of who I am and how I do things to him. And until today, we have great conversations. And like all fathers and sons, I think there's always that growing up and becoming men and challenging each other along the way. But I know if there's a time that I need support, I can go to him and he's always there for me.
Navigating trauma. I mean, that is key in our families because there's three sets of rules in our lives. There's the house rules that are a little antiquated. Then there's the little community, right? Your community rules. Yeah. And then you get into the big world.
Right.
And you know, now you're in Canada,
right?
And they have a whole different rules in society.
All sorts.
How was that for you and balancing all that? Did you get it right away or was it a learning curve?
Yeah. So for me, I think for me, I was sheltered from some of the challenges between community and sort of the big world. Certainly at home, we had sort of traditional values at home. And we were very much a close-knit family. We remain close-knit till today. Unfortunately, my mother passed away when I was very young, at the age of 9. And she ended up having a cancer that they weren't able to ultimately cure. And so we had to navigate that as children growing up.
Before we continue, what was her name, sir?
Her name was Husna Banu.
Oh.
Thank you so much.
No. We have to honor her.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that. And she was remarkable in her own short life here, and now I'm happy to say that she's in a much more peaceful place, which is great. And so I think from the house to the community was a degree of shelter, especially when we went to Markham. That was for me. My sister, I think, and my brother would beg to differ in high school. My sister used to wear still wears and wore the hijab, the head covering for Muslims, and faced a degree of racism, I suppose, in a city that I think was still growing up, and a culture that was still growing up and becoming more inclusive as Canada, I think, has slowly become. But I think for us overall, and we go back even to Zanzibar, my grandparents and the work they did then, transformative in terms of our relationship with other minorities across the communities and how we wanted to continue to work together to for the common good, make sure that everybody was reaching to where their full potential. And helping others along the way as opposed to just helping ourselves.
Your dad had to fill a couple of roles. Do you remember much of your mom or were you just young?
Yeah, so she passed away when I was 9. So a really difficult time when I was a student, grade 3, grade 4, had to work through some of that along the way. And a time in my life where my memory of that time is a little bit challenged, probably because, you know, as a child, you're going through what you're going through. But I do remember her and the things that she did. I remember her smile. I still remember her laughter. I remember also her discipline, which is something that we were boys. So you sometimes run into your mom's discipline, which is important. And but I still also remember while she was disciplining us, her softness, because I could see her softness while she was disciplining us. And but then also she instilled the love of hospital pudding in me, because when we would go to the hospital and she was there, she would save the hospital pudding for us. So that became sort of the fun part of going to the hospital and seeing her. And then, of course, you know, her mom, my grandmother, who came and helped us as we were children, and growing up from there. And then, and I will also shout out my second mother. My dad got remarried, and my second mom came in. She did a great job. Her name is Fatma Kermali. And she passed away also of cancer. So, we've had to deal with that a couple of times, but it's, a lady who came in, raised five children who weren't hers, but raised us to be strong people. And she helped me go into the field of medicine, as it turns out, because she looked at me and said, "Hush, you're not a businessman, go become a professional." So she saw that in me, from my time growing up, and helped me decide how I wanted to spend my life.
You're listening to the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Jose Candelario, and these are the words of Dr. Kermali. Now I understand. Now we got the foundation of why doctor, why medicine.
Yeah.
Now you're navigating life. You're dealing with loss, but then you're also doing things first time, first generation. Going to college. Now, do you have older siblings that went to college before you, or?
Yeah. Older brother, older sister.
Okay.
Older cousins.
Okay.
My dad moved to Canada because of education. He wanted us to have the opportunity for a stronger education. And so we had that opportunity, I believe, very strongly in the Western, societies. Both my older sister's right now a principal in the Canadian school system. My older brother's a successful entrepreneur. They're up in Canada as well. I was the first doctor in our family, which is great. I don't think I'm the smartest, but definitely the first doctor. so we had that opportunity to. I was able to see them be successful in their educational path. And my father has always been, I think our family has been always very pro-education, getting out there and learning about these. He was a teacher. He instilled the love of teaching in ourselves as well. So we just continue in those footsteps.
It's generational then. It's not like this, like college and educating and stuff. You had a good foundation for it, as opposed to many other people who, you know, come from a different background.
Well, it is in our blood, but it's still a lot of work. You have to see the benefit in taking that time to work through learning pieces of the puzzle that you may not use again on a day-to-day basis. I can't remember the last time I used calculus, but had to sit through a couple of years of learning it. But along the way, and now as a parent, I think I recognize that discussion and that sort of struggle in the minds of people to say, hey, is this what I need? But also, I think we were fortunate to have had, again, that background of seeing others do it before us.
Mm-hmm.
And so, hey, if they can do it, I can do it, and I can get through whatever turmoil that goes into it. So that's, you know, speaking about where we're looking for, I think that mentorship, that inspiration to say, hey, they've gotten there, how can I get there? Seeing doctors help my mom along the way, I think also formative for me in how I wanted to pursue and what I wanted to do moving forward in my life.
So you go to college.
Yeah.
Navigate that whole thing. And I mean, right now, identity is crazy because you're from Zanzibar. You're in Canada eating beaver tail, which is just fried dough, folks.
That's right. That's right.
I want to clarify that.
It's delicious. But it is fried dough.
It's just fried dough, beaver tail. So you're navigating all this. How do you maintain a center to push forward? or did the education track really provide a distraction?
You know, I think you center yourself by the people that you keep around you, and we were raised to keep people and especially at home. We were very much you're coming home at night type of a family. And the community around us also was very embracing. So in that way, you maintain your identity, you maintain your culture, you maintain your religion if you've got one. But I think that has helped me as I was navigating in university, keeping my friends close, making new ones as well along the way. But that I think that center was critical, that community, that religious and family foundation. But, you know, and there were others who had friends outside that they were able to surround themselves with. But, you know, and to me right now, the advice I give my children is you also want to make sure that the people around you are heading in the same direction that you're looking for. And if they're not, you also need to keep your eyes open to that and recognize those pieces. So who are you going to surround yourself with? Because that's a choice, I believe. And so, and some of it's circumstantial, sure, but you can also make the choice. And sometimes you want to take the opportunities that avail themselves. And if an opportunity presents itself to be able to have people around you to say, go for that opportunity and go forward from there, I think those can be helpful too.
It's always said that if you want to be successful, surround yourself with successful people.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had, and then decision making is an art form. Making choices is an art form.
Yeah.
Between your grandparents, your parents, your father, making very tough decisions to take certain risk. Is that part of your formula now? I mean, are you, even as a doctor, are you willing to take some risk to push things forward, or is this very calculative now?
I think from a personal perspective, and even professional, and especially I think in the field of medicine, we are always taking a balance between risk versus benefit in everything we do. Whether it's prescribing or not prescribing medications, there is always that conversation in our minds and then hopefully also with our patients, or very importantly with our patients, about the risk and benefit of anything that we're doing. Even something as small as using oxygen for a patient, there's a risk-benefit analysis that should be utilized. Even using a baby aspirin, there's a risk-benefit analysis that should be evaluated. So those pieces, I think, are trained within the training that we go through as a physician. In life, I think those are also part of those puzzles where you start to learn. You got to negotiate which way you want to go. You want to surround yourself with people who can help you along the way. Surround yourself with success so that you can be successful. But then also being able to take the opportunities when you have them. And truly seize them and run with them, because that's, you know, and I would imagine similar to if you're running and it's downhill, you get to run a little faster so that when you get to that uphill, you know, you got a little bit in your tank. And my daughter's learning how to drive, so I show her. I'm like, listen, you're going downhill. You don't have to hit the brakes as hard. That uphill, you're gonna have to spend more gas. So you wanna conserve your gas and make sure that you're wary of that piece as well. But that's part of that learning throughout life, where sometimes it's downhill, sometimes it's uphill, and sometimes you're on that straight coast, which is also fun, but you have to keep moving. You can't stand still, even if you're on the straight path, on the right path, because people around you are still going to be passing you.
This is Dr. Kamali, ladies and gentlemen, that you're listening to on 94.3 WYBC, The Rhythm of the City. On the electric drum, I'm Jose Candelario, just sitting here taking it all in. I want to transition into your job career after college, but I also want to touch on fearlessness, because you have a certain level of fearlessness. I can see it in your eye. I can see it in your eye. Where did it come from? Is it, and how did you develop as a dad? Did you just see it in your dad's eye? Was he fearless? Was mom fearless, being courageous in her battle? I mean, where did it come from?
Yeah, I can't say that I am fearless.
You mask it well then.
I think what I have is a trust and a super degree of optimism. And a trust that things turn out well. Truly, for me, I look to see, and I have been taught, and I have a strong belief system that things will turn out for the best. And that helps me when I make a decision, because I believe that, you know, if we're making the right decision, things will turn out for the best. And that's not to say that I've made the best decisions every time in my life. Not gonna hide away from that at all. But ultimately, having a trust in a higher power that there is a degree of, if you do good, good will come back to you. And I think if you do not good, then not good might come back around to you.
Karma.
Whether it's karma or whether it's something else.
Yeah.
I think for me, I have that trust that we're here, and if we have the opportunity to be a representative of something bigger, then that something bigger is going to help us along the way to get to where we need to go. And so, you know, when it comes to, for example, taking care of patients, there have always been that time where you're like, am I doing the right thing? And you ask for help. You ask amongst, you know, your other clinicians, and you ask for a specialist to come in and see what's going on and for their opinion. And you look for that guidance, and then you make an informed decision. And then you also have to trust that we're here to treat, and somebody else manages the healing. But then when it comes to life, again, it's that same belief system that there's very little that is in my control. But what I do have in my control, I need to control it. And then I let things happen as they happen. Is it fearlessness? Again, I think it's super. People look at me and say, Huss, you are the glass half full, overflowing half full type of guy. And I think I continue to have that in my life. Many things have suddenly opened when I didn't think were going to happen, and that's because I've left things up to a higher power at times, and he takes care of us all.
You coming out of college, Navigate College? You went to the University of Toronto,
yes.
And what was your first job? Did you get an internship? Was it a fellowship that transformed to a job, or
I went to volunteer at a hospital in college. My first job was selling knives. I did go door to door as a knife salesman. That didn't do well. I don't do that anymore. But those are the kitchen knives. Yeah. So that was high school. But in college, I went to volunteer at a hospital. And that was a lot of fun. And then they offered me a job, which was nights. So I would take my books into the hospital. And I was a unit clerk at Pediatrics Hospital.
Volunteering. What is that? We're in a world of instant gratification, my friend. You talk about putting in some time and letting it pay off later.
And from that perspective, it was, hey, I want to go to medical school. How do I go to medical school? And it's kind of like, well, you volunteer at a hospital. That's what I did, I guess. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. many people did that, 20, 30 years ago, to get that exposure, try to get, connected, I suppose. When you didn't have great connections along the way, so you started just expose yourself to the environment. It was great exposure. Got to see some great young doctors as they were going through their own fellowship. Made a fool of myself in front of nurses, so I don't have a fear of doing that anymore. And the nurses that have worked with me know that Huss makes a fool of himself every once in a while. But that's why we work as a team. But great time where you're sitting at the front of the desk answering phones, helping with the team, and being part of that gave me a perspective on the difficult work that it does take to handle a phone in a busy intensive care unit. So now when I go on the wards and I see that person running between phones and trying to file and trying to, I have an appreciation of what they're going through. So started there. And, things have varied since then. Did not get some jobs that I was hunting for and learned from that experience as well. But I think the great break that I had was when I got the opportunity to work at Yale's Molecular Pathology Lab and work with great clinicians there. And they helped me, redirect myself, I think, from that point in time back into medicine, and ended up at UConn Medical School and continued from there. Quinnipiac was a great opportunity where I did my graduate degree in molecular biology as well, taught there for a year. So it's been each one of those areas, you learn a little bit about who I am as an individual and what I can take away and what I can implement now and reflect back on to hopefully carry me forward for the future.
Molecular biology.
Yeah.
How does that integrate into being a doctor? I mean, is it nutrition based or is it chemical based or?
Chemical. So it's molecular biology. We're talking about the DNA of the cell.
Uh-huh.
And so it's the founding block of Western medicine in terms of understanding what's going on at a very small level. Has helped, of course, with understanding some of the dynamics of medicines, some of the dynamics of disease, where they cross between organism into human, and having a better appreciation sometimes of where things are happening in a human body. I like genetics. I think it's a very, very cool area, just in my own perspective. And of course it plays, I think, into that, into if I reflect on it, probably from the cancer exposure that I've had in my life, and understanding that maybe has created more of an awareness and an understanding of why cancer happens in my own mind, as opposed to sometimes, or at least a rationality of it, which balances the emotion of it.
We have a summit that's coming up. I mean, we can keep talking about RNA and DNA. Yes, and all day long, because it strikes a chord with me also. I'm big into that stuff, but we want to keep the audience engaged.
That's for a separate conversation.
The separate conversation. Yes. That's an in-depth one we can talk for, like I said, days. Because so much has changed, especially in the past like 5 years, 2 years almost, is things have really leaped forward, especially with AI, in your field. I mean,
it's tremendous what computing power and having it answer some of the questions and going through some of the research. It's definitely when we think back that some of the people that were thinking about this 50, 60, 70 years ago, they needed to flip pages to get to the right answer. We need to click a button, and it gives us the right answer. Mm. So, or at least gives us
a general idea.
Yes.
Of where to find the answer.
Because
people are still mistaken, thinking that AI is replacing humans, but I don't think so. I mean, you really have to feed it very specifics for it to give you the correct answer.
Yeah, AI hasn't yet been able to hold a patient's hand. And so I think for me, human touch is something that, and human interaction is something we are, we continue to desire greatly.
And listen.
Yes.
AI cannot listen like a human being. Very
correct.
Good. Doctor, we're on it, Doctor. Black Men in White Coats is a summit November 8th, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Palace Theater. What should people expect from this summit?
We want to spark the fire of excitement for a healthcare career. in our young students that are currently within Connecticut. We are looking particularly in the underrepresented minority field, but this is a event that is open for all students from grade 3 all the way up to college, for both them and their parents. So we want to have the students get out and experience different aspects of medicine. They're going to have hands-on sessions. For their parents, they're going to have educational sessions. We're going to talk to them about various challenges, about going through the world of post-secondary education and into medicine, and into healthcare in general. We're going to hear from leaders within the healthcare arena here in Connecticut, and clinicians that are participating across the board. This is the second year that we've done the event. So last year was a great success, and we're looking forward to another fantastic year where we've tweaked a couple of things. The students are going to get, I think, really, really fun age and grade appropriate exposures. So the older kids are going to have things like suturing, a needle and some fake skin, and they're going to learn how to do that, which is exciting. We've got some great hands-on activities for them. And the young kids are going to continue with, you know, doing CPR on mannequins. They'll have virtual reality sessions for the kids. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then the exposure to the Palace Theater, and getting inside there and seeing what that looks like and seeing what UConn Waterbury looks like inside there as well. So we're excited. We've got great partnership and great support across the state. Always use more, but we love the people who have supported us so far, and we've got a great day. And it's a free event, so we just need people to register. There's breakfast. There's lunch.
You hit the headline.
That's right.
Free.
you just got to register and show up, and t-shirt and a goodie bag and all sorts of fun for the kids.
Excellent. Black Men in White Coats Summit, November 8th, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. Palace Theater, UConn Waterbury. Dr. Kamali, thank you so much for coming through and sharing your story.
It's been a pleasure.
I do appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having us, and look forward to seeing the students and the parents at the summit on November 8th.
Very good. This has been the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC, the Rhythm of the City. I'm Jose Candelario. This has been the words of Dr. Huss Kermali, as they call him on the floor. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you, Jose. It's been a pleasure.
And for the general public, like always, thank you for listening.